This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my curious friends. How are you? You are looking magnificent. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, cooperation, creativity, and critical thinking. Right now, please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed. How are you doing this fine day?
I am wonderful, and it is a fine day. Fall is creeping up on us, and every fall, I feel like I'm in the middle of a science experiment.
You are, right? Because science is all around you.
It is, and I can't wait to figure out what science-y type person we're going to be speaking to today and what problem that person is going to help us solve.
Well, why don't you spin the wheel?
Excellent idea. That's why you're the captain in this team.
How can we help chickens and other animals cross the road?
How can chickens cross the... That's like one of those things. I have no idea. How are we going to help chickens cross the road?
Well, not just chickens, but animals of all kinds. We have an expert with us today. Her name is Wendy Collinson, and she is a road ecologist.
A road ecologist. That sounds pretty fancy.
It is. And what she does is help solve the problem. How do animals cross the road safely? Welcome to the show, Wendy.
Hi, Jed. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. Now, first of all, tell us, what is a road ecologist? Because that just sounds like such a cool job.
Well, it is a cool job, but it's very, very difficult to explain sometimes. So, ecology speaks to nature, the environment, so that goes back to what you said, Jed, with your love of animals. So the ecology side is working with animals, and roads is the negative side of my job, where roads can negatively affect animals. So hence the title of my position, which is road ecology, exploring the impacts of road on wildlife.
I guess getting impacted on the road is one of the ways that roads can negatively affect animals.
Yes, totally. And it's interesting how you use the term negative there, Jed, because what we also have to remember is that roads are actually a positive thing for us as human beings.
I'm really fascinated as to how the two can exist, or can they exist and benefit both?
Yes, and yes, most definitely, but it's about finding what we call a win-win solution. So firstly, if we look at the reason why we need roads, we use roads to get from A to B. So if we want to go on holiday, we want to get onto a nice fast highway and get there as quickly as we can. All those goodies that we get in the supermarket, how do you think those goodies get there? They arrive in lorries, so you've got your big trucks on the road. And of course, any of these products, be it you traveling or goods traveling, you need to get them there quickly. So if you've got roads that are in poor states of repair, you know, they've got lots of potholes, or they're very, very windy roads, things are going to take a long time. So it's critical for any country in the world to have a very, very good transport system.
Exactly.
But that then comes with the negative side of things. And very often the negative side of things is the effect this has on our wildlife. Now, we all love animals, but sometimes when you've got very, very busy roads, an animal will try and cross that road, and that's often to its detriment, because that animal will be hit by a vehicle and it will die. And then, of course, you've then got the knock-on effect. What effect through hitting an animal on the road may that have on a human being? I mean, if you can imagine hitting a large, large deer, and it comes through your windscreen, that can injure you. It might even, unfortunately, result in a fatality for someone in that car, not to mention the damage to the vehicle and the insurance costs. So, you know, it's kind of a circular thing where we want an efficient and fast transport system. We want to protect our wildlife, and we also want to protect human lives. So it's about finding that balance and win-win for the good reasons of roads as well as the negative consequences.
Oh, yeah, which is why the problem that you are helping us solve today is how can the chicken and other animals cross the road safely?
Well, I love that question, Jennifer. And it also is the million-dollar question, because it's something that can't be fixed overnight. So that's where the ecologist would start to go out and gather data. Now, when I say data, this is the horrible side of my job. You have to go out and count how many dead animals are on the road, what animals they are, and where it happens. And it can be quite heartbreaking to do it, especially when you see families of certain animal groups. But you need to build up, I like to refer to it as a picture of what's going on and where they, what we call the hot spot areas are. So where the problems actually are happening in what parts of your country. And again, you can't just gather this information in one day. Sometimes it takes you a couple of years to get this information. And once you've then got it, you can then decide on the solution to fix it. And there are lots of different solutions depending on the animal. And whilst we haven't done a huge amount in Africa, which is where I actually work, the United States and Europe have done a lot of things, and we are actually learning from some of the solutions that have been done to help, how you chose to word it, how to get that chicken across the road safely and what can be done.
So it sounds like you're the type of person who's responsible for helping states and cities decide where to put up those deer crossing and bear crossing, and in my city, goose crossing signs.
Yes, totally. That is my job to advise. So initially, so this is going back about 15 years ago, I was one of those ones that had to drive the roads, count all the dead animals, and then start to make the decisions. But now I've got a little bit older and the field of road ecology is becoming more established in Africa, I have lots of students and members of the public who actually help me gather this information, and then I analyze all that data and present it to the relevant authorities, so that might be your Department of Transport, and come up with suggestions of where we need to effectively put our sticking plasters to solve the problems.
Yeah, that's the thing, is to figure out where the animals are. It's funny, here in Florida, of course, we have, believe it or not, gator crossings, alligator crossings, where they go across. And it's not unusual to see signs for turtle crossings. In fact, I have, I and a few of my friends, we carry blankets, or I guess beach towels, in the back of our vans. And if you see one of those turtles crossing, I have held up two lanes of traffic to jump out and grab a snapping turtle, a huge snapping turtle, who did not like to be picked up, and help him across the road. But, you know, it's places, I think, bringing attention to it. Do these signs help, you think, or is there way more that needs to be done?
Again, that's a really interesting question, Jennifer. Signs are probably one of the cheapest measures that you can use to warn drivers of wildlife around. And it's like that sticking plaster that a road agency will use as a quick fix to the problem. Unfortunately, and I think this is a question you have to dig deep and ask yourself, how many times have you been driving on a road and there's been a road sign and you've actually paid attention to it? Often what happens when that sign, you know, if you're driving that road maybe every single day of the week, every single day for that whole year, you eventually become habituated to that sign. And if I were to then say to you, right, Jennifer, there's a sign on this section of road, can you tell me what animal it's on? And you probably wouldn't remember. So we are in a position, and this is something that we're exploring with the organisation that I work with, the Endangered Wildlife Trust in South Africa, is to try and come up with more exciting, unusual signs. So I'm pretty sure this is what you have in the United States. I know we have it in the United Kingdom as well as South Africa. It's like a red triangle, isn't it? And inside that red triangle, you have a silhouette of an animal. Here in South Africa, we have an image usually of a deer. And as I said, people become habituated. So we've been exploring the idea of using photographic images, and so therefore that's much more appealing to people. They actually do a double take, and because they do that double take, they then do modify their behavior. And one of the ways, I mean, this is where it gets quite cool, and one of the ways that we have been able to prove that our signs have made a difference is we have been using fake animals that we actually place on the road. So we've got a fake rubber snake that we lie on we place it on the road. We've got our signs up on our photographic ones, and we hide in the bushes and we watch the driver's behavior. So do they actually see the signpost? And because it's an unusual signpost, do they change their behaviour and slow down and notice the snake, or do they just ignore it? And we found that almost 80% of the people did actually change their behaviour. In fact, a few people even stopped completely to wind down their window and have a look at the snake because they thought it was so real.
Wow. Huh. I'm going to ask a question that might sound kind of dumb, but that's what I do. That's my job here. Why do, you know, if a deer sees his brother or sister cross the street and get hurt, why do they still keep crossing the roads at those places? Why don't they learn, I shouldn't be crossing the road there?
Okay, Jed. So this is where the ecology side of my job comes into it. So ecology involves a number of things, one of which is animal behavior. So this is where you have to understand how animals behave, and all animals have different types of behavior depending on how they interact with one another. So you use the example of a deer. Now, deers hang around in herds. So where you have one deer, there's most likely to be another group of them in the bushes that will then attempt to also cross at the same time. And if I relate that to some of the herd species that we have in Africa, which many of the listeners will probably have heard of, so zebras, they hang around in herds, giraffe hang around in herds. So where you get one of them, you're going to get lots of them. But then you also get some animals that are quite solitary. So, again, let's use an African example, which I think all the listeners will know about. Leopards. Leopards are usually solitary. So a leopard will cross the road, and once that leopard's crossed, it's highly unlikely that there's going to be another leopard behind it. So you have to have an understanding of animal behavior in order to know potentially whether there's going to be another crash or a likely collision with an animal or not. And this is where the awareness and education needs to come in, and potentially the role of teachers to not only talk about different types of animals that we have, but their behavior, so that they can then apply that for when they get their driver's license and start driving on the roads and have an understanding of, okay, well, there's a signpost of an alligator. You don't get herds of alligator crossing the road, but you would get a herd of deer.
So can you say if there is a herd, is it, I mean, I don't know if you can answer this, but is it more likely that the first one gets hit or the ones following it? Is that something you can figure out?
Not really, because it totally depends on what's going on with the traffic.
Oh, okay. I mean,
roadkill effectively is very random. So whilst you can usually predict where they are going to cross, because animals always usually have strict migratory routes.
Oh.
They'll usually cross in the same section. But depending on whether it's the first member of the herd or in the middle of the herd or the last one will very much depend on the traffic.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. That kind of answers your question, Jed. Why did they keep going in the same place? Because that's where they have their migration traffic or, you know, routes.
Yeah.
Is it something that when people are building roads that they should be thinking about? It's like, maybe we shouldn't build a road because this is where the deer like to cross the street.
Totally, Jed. And this is actually one of the challenges that all of us face. So it's not a challenge that's unique to Africa. Many of my colleagues who work in the United States or even in Europe, all of them argue the point that when a road is being planned, the road ecologist should be consulted right at the very beginning. And what often happens, sadly, is we are actually consulted too late. So the planning for the road has already gone ahead. Then they consult the road ecologist to say, oh, is this a good idea to build this road here? And before you know it, they've started construction for the road. And you suddenly realize that it's in the middle of a migratory path for a particular animal, or it might even be going through some very, very pristine or precious habitat. For example, like a wetland area where there's a frog species that only occurs in that particular area. Some road agencies, I have to be honest, are very, very good at involving the road ecologist at the beginning. But then in some countries that are still in the early stages of understanding the negative side of roads, that's often where they forget to consult the road ecologist until too late. And this often goes back to just lack of knowledge that road ecologists exist, or unfortunately, they see a road ecologist as an extremist, someone who is maybe, I mean, you're often given the term a greenie, and a greenie is seen as possibly something negative, as in you want to disrupt what they do or prevent what they're doing. And that's not the case. It's about finding that win-win and that balance.
We talked about putting up signs for animals. Are there any other ways animal ecologists can help animals cross over to where they want to be without facing dangers on the road?
100%. And this is where it gets really, really exciting, because there's lots of evidence of this in the United States. And it's something that we are just starting to do in South Africa, because we've very much learnt what's happening in America. So where you have a road, very often what you have underneath that road are what we call underpasses. Right. So these underpasses are in place often for the purpose of human beings who need to cross the road safely. And also underneath a road, you will often see these large pipes. These are known as storm drains, because when there's lots and lots of rain, you don't want the road to get flooded, but that water's got to go somewhere, so it goes through these storm drains. And evidence has shown us that some animals have actually evolved. They've changed their behaviour to start to use these underpasses to cross the road. And that's very, very clever of these animals, because if you think about it, you know, it's evolution. And they've evolved very, very quickly to use these man-made structures and get across the road. So in many cases, you'll see not only the underpass and the storm drain there, but right next to it, there'll be a fence. And this fence serves a purpose effectively like a funnel. You know how you would have a funnel where, you know, you would put water into and drain water into a bottle. So you've got this funnel of a fence that effectively guides and directs animals to these underpasses so that they cross underneath. And by comparison to an underpass, this is a little bit more expensive, because it does then need to be built as opposed to the underpasses already being there. Some countries are actually building what are called green bridges.
I've seen those. They look so cool.
Yeah. And they connect the habitat. So if you've got trees on one side of the road and open fields on the other, the overpass will mirror that. So you'll have a green bridge that's basically made up of the same type of vegetation or habitat that you find on both sides of the road. So the animal just thinks it's exactly the same habitat as what it lives in and doesn't realise the road is there. So it's very, very clever how animals are evolving their behaviour, and also human beings are helping them to avoid the roads.
So that's what I was going to ask. So you don't have to, like, train them to go over these bridges. They just think that this is part of their natural habitat.
Exactly, yes. And of course, Jennifer, we do need to test this, because it's all well and good saying that we have a little bit of evidence. One of the ways that we know this for a fact, besides standing there and watching them, is we actually set up what are called camera traps. So a camera trap is very, very different to your snappy that you take on holiday with you and take photographs of things. A camera trap is something that you would actually attach to a tree, and it works on a motion sensor. So anything that moves will set the camera trap off, and it will record everything that passes in front of it. So you can put your camera trap up inside the underpass, or you can set it up on the green bridge. And there's your evidence of the animals that are moving back and forth, which for a scientist, you need this evidence to show that what you're doing is working.
That's so cool. And I really like the fact that human beings have evolved to the point where we actually care and we spend the money to hire road ecologists like you and spend money to build these green bridges. As I think when I was growing up, like about 100 years ago, we just said, oh, put the road through and we don't care about the animals.
I think, Jed, as well, what you have to remember, 100 years ago, there weren't so many vehicles on the road.
This is true. Yeah, I had to ride a dinosaur to school. It was...
So I'm wondering, do you have any suggestions for kids maybe who want to do this? Because I'm thinking putting a fake snake in the road and watching people, that's probably not a good plan for them. but maybe you could come up with some other ideas that they could help animals with.
Yes, 100%, Jennifer. What the kids have to remember is, a lot of the work that we actually do does involve some danger, and certainly I would not suggest for them to be walking along the roadsides and looking for a dead animal or undertaking any of my experiments that I do, whereby you're hiding in the bushes, watching things, because there is the element of danger to themselves. So I wouldn't recommend that at all. However, if they are interested in the field of road ecology, there's a number of things that they can do to actually help with the cause. I'm pretty sure in every single country, definitely in South Africa, definitely in the United States, and any of the other children from other countries that are listening in, many of the countries actually have cell phone apps that you can record any dead animal that you see on the road. Now, let's face it, a dead animal on the road is very, very upsetting to see. It's quite distressing. I know some people get very emotional when they see it. And it's not always safe to stop your vehicle, get out of the vehicle and have a look. In fact, I certainly wouldn't recommend that. But if it is safe to be able to stop and the children really, really want to get involved with supporting these projects, they can contribute through downloading the cell phone app in their respective countries. And that's very easy to do. They would literally just need to go online and Google roadkill cell phone app.
Oh, okay.
And then whenever they're in the car with their moms and dads and they see something on the road, if it's safe for mom and dad to pull over, then they can literally record that information, and they are then going to be helping researchers in this field with valuable information, because let's face it, it is not physically possible for a scientist to drive every single road in their country. And I can't do that. So I rely very much on the public sending me the information through the cell phone app. So that's one way that they can get involved for sure.
I really love that, because you're right. It really is upsetting to see an animal that got hurt or was killed on the road. But this is a way that empowers kids, and they can say, wow, I don't like that that's happening, but I can make a difference. I can use this app and give it to scientists, and then scientists can figure out a way to help animals cross the road safely and help humans and animals coexist in this space more safely.
Yes, 100%. And, of course, you know, it doesn't just have to be kids. It can be adults. But, again, it mustn't be the driver. It would have to be the passenger. You don't want the driver on their cell phone at the same time.
No, exactly not. But, you know, and I think even, like, I ride my bike from here, and sometimes you ride, you know, I mean, we have a sidewalk along the road, but, I mean, unfortunately, I've seen animals out there. So if you're on your bike, but probably the most important thing is not to touch it, right? Like, you don't have to get that close. You can just take a photo of it. You don't necessarily have to pick it up and hold it or touch it like that, because parents might not be thrilled with their kids doing that. But I think that, again, I think that's a great way that kids can get involved. But this has been a fabulous show. Thank you so much for joining us, Wendy. I think the kids will just love hearing all about what a road ecologist does.
Fantastic. No, thank you so much for having me.
Whoa, Jennifer, that was fascinating. You know, at the beginning of the show when I spun the wheel, I thought you were setting me up for a joke, but this was like a really great science lesson.
It was, wasn't it? And think about all the different things that we could do to help animals cross the road safely and also just be safe in their habitats. I mean, the mind just boggles, doesn't it?
It does. It's really exciting. And I'm really excited that Wendy told us about some ways that we can help animals get across those roads safely.
Exactly. And if you forget, after you listen to the podcast, go to our website, solidforkids.com. Remember, we have a whole page on every expert that we interview. You can see pictures of them. You can learn more about them and the organizations they work for. And if you do the challenge and you get permission by your parents to tag us on our Instagram or Twitter at KidSolve, you could be entered to win a book.
And there's great stuff for teachers and homeschooling parents on there too, right?
Yes, please check out our brand new Teacher Pay Teacher site, Solve It for Kids. And you can see a new teacher pack. We're creating teacher packs for each and every one of the episodes so you can use them in your classroom or with your kids at home.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait till next week when you can join us for another episode of
Solve It for Kids.